This on, and tonight we're in Carry This Message. On Wednesday night we finished actually the big book on action, and we finished working with others. I'm going to cover the other chapters: employers, wives, family afterwards, vision for you. I covered those for the first time last summer, and people thought it was really good. I got a lot out of it. Every time I go through it, I learn something new. As you know, I don't have any notes, and we just see it, what God reveals to us. And we're going to do that, but I thought after we finished, I'm taking information from this book, Carry This Message. It's a guide to big book sponsorship by Joe McHugh, who did the Joe and Charlie. I think he and Charlie are really responsible for keeping the big book alive during the period of transition to treatment centers. In 1980, they started doing their meetings, 35 a week. Joe McHugh was a brilliant man. He's from Arkansas. He's dead now. And people spent some time with him, and he has the book, The Steps We Took, which follows the big book, and we use that here. And then this Carry This Message. And last week we did Passing on a Special Gift. We didn't finish it. I put the last few pages that we didn't finish on this one. We're going to start, however, with this. So when I don't finish this, we'll have the two together, and then I won't have to make new copies next week. Theoretically. Did anybody understand that? It made sense. All right, keep coming back, Tracy. All right, I understood it. Now, if we don't finish the handout, instead of copying the whole thing over, I can just copy it. Now, it took me, 9 years to figure that out. And I said, I don't have to copy the whole thing over. I can just copy. You see how it is? Old idea. Tracy's laughing. She thinks I'm funny. Very slowly. Thanks, Dan. All right, so this is really a good chapter. We have some people new here. Some people have been around a lot. But this is a very, very simple, concise way of looking at how AA came together. And if you know the history, it makes it more powerful. And you can see the hand of God in this. And it's called a synchronicity of events. I call it the hand of God. And it says AA traces its beginning to a May 1935 meeting of two men in Akron, Ohio. That's Bill W. and Dr. Bob. But we're going to look at more of the history, how they came together, and what happened in their lives. I do have on the site, I have several podcasts, one on AA, The Hand of God, one on the AA history and the Oxford group. And so if you're interested in that, they're on the site, and I think they were... There's a lot of information in there. It says, to work successfully with others, it's helpful to know the chain of events, as Bill Wilson put it, that brought the first 40 people together to write the steps, to write AA, and to launch the fellowship of the same name. We have about 30 or more people here tonight, so I think there were only 40 or 45 people sober when the big book was published. But they had found something. They knew they had found something that worked, and it did work because we're here today, right? And think about that. Many people in AA and other 12-step groups know the names of Bill and Lois Wilson, Dr. Bob, Ann Smith, and their roles in founding AA and Al-Anon. A miraculous synchronicity of events led to the powerful dynamics of recovery followed in AA and now many other 12-step groups. Think about how many people have benefited from the spiritual message in that book. It says, we'll start in Switzerland in 1931, and this is what we covered in There's a Solution last Saturday, and that'll be out on the site probably a couple days. So the people who are listening, it's already be on the site. That's where Roland Hazard, he writes, a New York investment banker suffering from alcoholism. I always thought he was from Providence, Rhode Island, but I guess he was from that family, and he was in New York working investments. He was a hopeless alcoholic. He had tried all the psychiatrists in the United States, and he went to Switzerland to Dr. Jung. He wanted to go to Freud, but Freud was too busy. And so he went to Dr. Jung, who was a very, very famous psychiatrist, psychologist in Switzerland. Dr. Jung told him, Roland, there might be hope if he could stay sober, if he could have a personality change to a spiritual experience. Actually, what the book says was, you remember, Roland went there, and he had a year of therapy. And he said he knew the inner workings of his mind perfectly, remember? And he had it all figured out. And then he got drunk 3 days later and then went back to see Dr. Young, and Dr. Young told him there was no hope for him, remember? He says, you have the mind of a chronic alcoholic, there's no hope. So Roland said, there's no hope? Is there any? And he said, there are exceptions. This is where Dr. Young gave us the spiritual solution. He said, we've seen people recover. It's a phenomenon we don't understand, but these alcoholics have a shift in their whole personality, remember? Their ideas and attitudes and emotions, there's an upheaval, and they change the way they're emotional, the way they see things. And we talk about that, a personality change sufficient to recover from alcoholism. And he said he's seen these. So Roland says, well, good, I go to church. He said, no, we're not talking about church. We're talking about something different. And so Roland went back, and I think it gets then there. He says he returned to New York and found an Oxford group where he sought a spiritual experience. And he actually went to the Calvary Church in New York, where Reverend Shoemaker, who was a very important part of the book being written in AA, being here today, Reverend Shoemaker became Bill W.'s spiritual advisor. In fact, Bill W. wanted Reverend Shoemaker to actually write the 12 steps. He says, no, they have to be written by an alcoholic. And so Roland returned to New York. The Oxford groups were informal fellowships of people from any and all religions who were not satisfied with their spiritual progress. But they were mainly Protestant Christians who wanted to live and practice first century Christianity, the principles that Jesus put in the Gospels, to practice that way of life. So they could, I'm writing that thing on the book of James, and the book of James is how we can put into practice the principles in the Sermon on the Mount, and how we can practice through our faith a change in our behavior, which is what we talk about in AA, right? Mm-hmm. And he said, Frank Buckman, a Lutheran minister, was the originator of the Oxford group. As a young man, he had directed a boys' school in Philadelphia. I hope the people listening to the podcast, you don't hear the rustling of the papers too much. I bought this microphone to try to keep it down, but you know, it is what it is. It's not a professional, there you go. Boys' school in Philadelphia. He had an argument with the board members. He got mad, resigned, left the country. Anybody ever have that happen to them? Got pissed off, that's what they meant to say. So he went to England in 1908, and this is a true story. He went to a church meeting one night and heard a woman, Jesse Penn Lewis, preach on resentments and forgiveness. And I've read some of Frank Buckman's writings, and when he was in the church, the cross became an eye. And he was listening to her. He said, it's me, I'm the one that caused all these problems. And he could see how his resentments and his actions and attitudes had moved him away from God. And she talked about resentment and forgiveness. He was greatly moved by what he heard. Realizing that he held resentment against the 6 board members in Philadelphia who had offended him. Now remember, he was offended by the board members, but we know why. Because he took actions to cause them, right, to be upset with him. You see, that's how resentments work. And he could see that because he went back to his room that night, sat down, wrote them a letter asking for their forgiveness. So he could see, like he did a 4-step on it, he could see his mistakes in his thinking that led to the resentment. He later said this action produced a sudden change in his life, an instant change. He was a really, really great guy. He really was a powerful spiritual person. He never heard back from these people, but began to reflect on how his life was tremendously improved. He began to ask himself, how did that happen? So I said at a meeting a few weeks, AA started because of a resentment, because of Frank Buckman and what we're going to read about in the Oxford groups. They gave us the program of action. And they'll talk about, but that's where Abby Thatcher went, and that's where Bill W. went, and that's where Roland Hazard went. And so he said, how did this happen? What did I do to bring that about? If I could understand what I did, I can renew myself in any way I want to. Better than that, I can show someone else how to do it. As he sought to understand his experience, Buckman listed the things he had done. 1, he had surrendered. 2, he examined his sins. He shared and confessed. He'd made restitution, and he asked for God's guidance. Now we're going to see on the next page, there was a 6th step called witnessing. And that it was witnessing that they told Ebbie Thatcher he was sober 60 days. He says, you need to go witness somebody. He says, I know the guy who needs some help, Bill W. Remember he went there on that morning and Bill said, I had enough booze to outlast him, right? And that was in November 1934. See how all these things came together? So he began telling other people how to do this. He said that when we can do these simple things, then and only then can we receive God's guidance. So he had a program on which he could unblock himself from God and have a relationship from God. Anybody think that sounds like the 12 steps in the big book? And Buckman was immediately successful. People who followed this procedure were changed. The Oxford groups grew and spread. Realizing that these five basic principles, these tenets, were the foundation of Christianity, Buckman called his movement First Century Christian Fellowship. Actually, the name Oxford Group didn't come, I thought it was from Oxford, England, right? But it came because there was a group of guys from Oxford who were in this group, and they were in South Africa, and they were doing the, they were doing their work and working with people, and somebody called them the Oxford Group, and that's how the name came to be, the Oxford Group. And also, it doesn't say in here, but Frank Buckman met a young minister in 1924 in China, 1921 in China. And this minister was trying to help people turn to Christianity. His name was Reverend Shoemaker. See how it all came together? And so he talked to Reverend Shoemaker about why he wasn't being successful with the people and how he had to change his attitude. And so Reverend Shoemaker became part of this movement. He came back to New York and he was there when Bill and Ebbie and Roland needed help. You see how it came together? And so when Roland Hazard returned to New York and consulting with Dr. Young, is it okay if I add extra history in here? Because I know quite a bit. I didn't say that, but I know a lot of the history of AA. It didn't come out right. Forgive me on the podcast. He joined an Oxford. They give me a lot of crap here. I just want to tell you. He joined an Oxford group and started using its tenets. Doing so produced him the change in the spiritual experience he sought. And as a result, he stayed sober until he died. Now, it's interesting because Roland Hazard knew Ebbie Thatcher. And Ebbie Thatcher was from Albany, New York. Roland Hazard, I think, was from Providence. And they used to go and vacation in Vermont when they were teenagers at a town where Bill Wilson lived. And Bill Wilson used to be friends with them, and there was a lady named Lois Burnham. She was a doctor's daughter, and she used to go there. She became Lois Wilson. And so these people all knew each other. And then when Ebbie went to Albany, he couldn't live in Albany, the family had had enough. Anybody ever heard of that before?
His dad was running for judge of the town, for mayor of the town, and he was the town drunk, and he couldn't be there to help.
Well, actually, and his father was going to be a vice presidential nominee, so they sent him to Vermont, where they had a cabin. And Ebbie did two things that pissed everybody off. He drove his car into somebody's living room in the house, and then when he got out of the car, he asked the lady for a cup of coffee. That didn't go very well. Ebbie was a character, and then second thing he did was he took a shotgun and he was painting the house, and the birds were doing their thing, so he just shot up the whole neighborhood. And so they locked him up and they were going to put him away. And Roland Hazard had a friend in the Oxford group who was the son of the judge.
Sivu Graves.
And so they went, Sivu Graves, and they went, he's been coming to meetings. And they went up to, they said to Dad, give us Ebbie. He says, I'll do anything as long as you don't bring him back into the state. So they took Ebbie down to the church, and after 60 days, he went to Bill W.'s house. Isn't that something? Think about that. And then we're here today. And you can read about Ebbie Thatcher and Bill W. in his story. You know, it's page 10 through 14. And Ebbie talked to Bill, and remember that Bill argued with Ebbie about God. You know, Bill's dying. He can't stop drinking. And he's arguing with Ebbie about God, and Ebbie says, well, choose your own conception of God. And then Bill said, well, I can't argue with that. The other thing we don't like to mention, AA, I don't know if I should mention it, it's being recorded, but Bill was drinking when Ebbie was talking to him the first day. you know. But Bill had drank so much that he could actually handle his liquor pretty well, so he was coherent through their conversation. But then when he sobered up, he went to the hospital. That's when he worked the steps. He got admitted to the hospital about a week or so later. As he found sobriety, Roland heard that an old friend, Ebbie Thatcher, was about to be committed to a mental institution for his alcoholism. Roland took a couple of his Oxford group friends to the court. The judge turned Ebbie over to them. Roland took Ebbie to his home, and the 2 weeks worked with him through the Oxford group tenets. Then he took Ebbie to the Reverend Sam Shoemaker's Calvary Mission in New York City, where he worked with people suffering from alcoholism. Ebbie's work at the mission with the alcoholics became an important part of his recovery. One day, Ebbie thought about his longtime friend Bill Wilson. He wondered whether Bill might be interested in what he was doing to get sober. This was November 1934. Now, you remember in Bill's story, he had been to Towns Hospital in 1933, and when he was in there in 1933, Dr. Silkworth told him that there were two things wrong with you, Bill. One, you can't put alcohol in your body, you can't control how much you drink. And the second thing wrong with you is you can't keep from taking the first drink. And Dr. Silkworth was not an alcoholic, he was a neurologist. I think they talk about that in a little bit. And so he understood the problem and explained to Bill W. So if you remember, Bill W. left the hospital and said he was going to be fine because he had knowledge. He knew it was wrong. He was going to be good. He was okay. And he said self-knowledge would fix it, and it says the next day he was drunk. You see? And so our knowledge of what's wrong with us won't save us. Why? Because willpower won't work, right? Because right before we drink, we can't see anything wrong with it. Our mind tells us it's okay. And then if we drink, we have another problem. We can't stop, so we're screwed, right? So he knew about the problem, and he gained the problem, and this is 1933. And then right when he got admitted again in 1934, remember, he heard the doctor and his wife saying that he's going to be locked up, or he's going to go insane, or die of DTs. There was no hope for him. And that's when he left the hospital. And then he was sitting in his home, dying, and Ebbie came to him. Joe and Charlie said that God got tired of watching us die, and he decided to give us this message. And he also felt that alcoholics would be desperate enough to do these principles to get closer to him. And so he gave the principles to alcoholics first. People think that these 12 steps should be studied by everybody in all the churches and everywhere, because all it is a way of unblocking and getting a relationship with God. But we would be desperate enough to do it. And I think that's true, right? So he picked alcoholics, and we're here today. It said Bill Wilson had gained an understanding of the problem, but he didn't have the solution until Ebbie walked into the kitchen, shared with him what they had found out about the solution. Remember, Ebbie comes in, he says, I have a religious idea and a program of action. And then Bill looked at him and said, the old guy's eyes glowed, right? But he said, I have enough booze to outlast his preaching. But look how we're here today. You can read that again. I'm not going to read from the book again, but Bill's story is really powerful. Bill would have to make one more hospital stay for his illness. There's a footnote down here about Dr. Silkworth. He actually, he was a neurologist, but he lost all of his money in the stock market. And so he went to Towns Hospital. Charlie Towns had a hospital for alcoholism. And then he worked with about 50,000 people. Can you imagine? So he certainly understood. And so Bill W., he talks about admitting his bottom and having a dramatic spiritual experience. He writes, my depression deepened unbearably and finally seemed to me as though I was at the very bottom of the pit. Finally, just for a moment, the last vestige of my proud obstinacy was crushed. Powerful way of saying, you know, he was done. He just was done. Proud obstinacy. It's our proud obstinacy that's killing us. I was wondering if that lady would come back who was here Sunday. And she told me at the end of the meeting, she came up and she said it was great and gave me a hug. And she says, you know, I'm 99% ready, but I got 1% stubborn. I said, well, you know, I was a cancer doctor, and that 1% of cancer will kill you. And I said, you're 1% stubborn today, but next week it'll be 5%. And then that's how the ego rebuilds. So that's why we say you have to work the first step 100%. It has to be a complete defeat. And it's hard. It's hard for alcoholics to get completely defeated. So he cried out, Bill W., if there's a God, let him show himself. I'm ready to do anything. And then the room lit up, and he had a religious experience. And I believe that it's similar to Saul on the Damascus Highway. Because Joe and Charlie mentioned this. Something happened to Bill Wilson in that room that he couldn't help but working with alcoholics. He couldn't help but carrying the message. Remember, for 6 months, he couldn't help anybody. And so something powerful happened to Bill W. And something happened to Saul on the Damascus Highway. And God's chosen people throughout history to carry on his message. So he chose Bill and he chose others. Ebby visited Bill at Towns Hospital. When Bill asked him, he again provided the Oxford Group's program through which Ebby had found his sobriety. And that's described on pages 13 and 14 of Bill's story. It's powerful stuff, those two pages where he says at the end of it, simple but not easy, it meant the destruction of self-centeredness. And he says, I have to turn to the Father Light for direction in all things. Very powerful pages. Ebby visited Bill at the Towns Hospital. They went through the program. Dr. Silkworth observed that when Bill worked with other alcoholics, he didn't drink. Actually, so when Bill Wilson left the hospital, Dr. Silkworth suggested to him continue to find other alcoholics who were. That isn't really true. What happened was Bill, right after he worked the steps and he was in the room, he said, what I can do to help all these alcoholics, think about it. He went in there self-centered. Alcoholic, and within this time, he had a transformation to think of something had happened to him, and he wanted to give this away to all alcoholics. Now, that's powerful. And so, the first 6 months, he went to the hospital. He talked to anybody he could. He couldn't get anybody to stay sober, and they're going to talk about this because he was trying to preach to them, and. The doctor said, well, what you really need to do is tell them what happened to you, what you were like, and then what happened to you. And not what happened to you and are you like this? And we talk about that. We talk about how we were for the other person to relate. That's how the big book's written. It's how they were. Are you like them? Then you'll do what they did. And it was Lois Wilson who said he was very discouraged, Bill W., because somebody died in his house. He couldn't get anybody to stay sober. But Lois said, you're sober, Bill. And so it's helped you. So then remember when he's in the lobby of the Mayfair Hotel 6 months later, and the deal didn't go through, and he was really depressed. He didn't have any money. And it was in the evening. And he heard the music from the bar. And he says, I'll go into the bar and listen to some music. Well, you know what that was mean. And so Bill was right there in the threshold of that Mayflower bar. And then here's where God made his move. He said to Bill, bad idea, call another alcoholic. Something came into his mind that says, I don't want to go in there. It's a bad idea, right? We talk about how God restores us to sanity. And he said, find someone to talk to. And then he found Dr. Bob, and we're here today. It's powerful stuff when you think about it.
Dr. Bobman, good old time.
Yeah. Good stuff. AA Comes of Age, Dr. Bob and the Old Timers are fantastic books. We should really read those at meetings too. So at talk, he told drunks that they need to find God, and they wouldn't relate. So he went back to Silkworth, and Silkworth told him, he said, Bill, I think you're going about it wrong. You're trying to get these people to have a great white flash type of spiritual experience. I think you ought to first tell them what I told you about the Arya obsession and the problem. Remember, we talk about that when we work with others. We talk about our experience. So they may see the hopelessness of what they're doing, and they may try your program. Then here they talk about he went to Akron to see the proxy fight, and it went down. He didn't have any money. He's in the lobby of the Mayflower Hotel. And he decided to call Reverend. He called him a whole bunch of ministers. The only guy he got was a guy named Reverend Thunk. And Reverend Thunk gave him the name of Henrietta Seiberling. And Henrietta Seiberling was one of the daughter-in-laws of the Firestones, and she was living in a house on the Firestone property. And she had been in the Oxford group. You see how it all comes together? And she had gone to the Oxford group with a guy named Dr. Bob and Lois Smith. And the Oxford group came to Akron because the Thomas Edison's second in command was in the Oxford group, and he had gotten somebody sober. So Harvey Firestone's son was an alcoholic. So he wanted the guy to come and start the Oxford group in Akron to try to help his son. And so they had the Oxford group there. And so they talk here in this writing, Henrietta wrote down her morning meditation and God's guidance that Dr. Bob should not drink one more drop of whiskey. They actually prayed, and they had quiet time, and she actually prayed that Dr. Bob would be helped. And then she got a call from Bill W. A week later. So, do we get the basket passed around, everybody? All right, it's AA. Bill went to Akron. He got the names of the local ministers, and he found Walter Tunks, and then he got to Henrietta Seibring, and she said, well, I want you to talk to Bill Smith, Dr. Bob, right? And this was a Saturday. And so Mother's Day was the next day, and I don't know if Dr. Bob was passed out on the floor. Now, some people said it was in the foyer. It could have been in the kitchen. And he had bought a potted plant, and she told Henrietta, well, Dr. Bob's potted, and he's potted next to the plant. And so he couldn't get together that Saturday night. But actually, I understand that Bill Wilson went with Henrietta Seibring. He actually went to her house, and they had dinner, and she asked him if he would be okay, and he said he would. And then he met with Dr. Bob the next day at the Seibring house. You could still go see. It's in Akron. It's been preserved. Where they met, and Dr. Bob said he would give him 15 minutes. Now, Dr. Bob was dying, right? And somebody was going to help him with his alcoholism, so he said he would be kind enough to give the guy 15 minutes. Does that sound like alcoholics? You know, here he's dying, a guy wants to help him. But they talked for what? They talked for 3 hours. And Dr. Bob, you know, had gone to the Oxford group and he read the Bible and he believed in the Lord and this and that, but he thought his drinking was a sin. He couldn't forgive himself, right? So when Bill W. came and told him that his problem was that he had no power not to drink and he couldn't control how much he drank, then Dr. Bob could decide to change the way he saw himself and forgive himself. And then it says, on the next page, it says, once Dr. Bob saw the problem in this way, he started to recover. And so if you remember, Dr. Bob was at his house with Lois and Bill, and they worked the steps for 2 weeks. And then Dr. Bob said, I have to go to the AMA convention. And Lois says to Bill, don't let him go. Every time he goes, he gets drunk. And Bill says, well, he has to live in the world. You know, we can't lock him up. So Dr. Bob went, and he got really drunk. There's a lot of stories on how he actually got home, and he ended up in his nurse's house, and this and that. But eventually, they came, what?
Damn nurses.
Yeah, stop it. Yeah. And so eventually, they got him the bill, and he had to do this surgery. But the story was that the morning of the surgery, Bill gave him a drink, but the real truth is that he was several days that he was really in bad shape. And then, but he had to do the surgery that day, and they took him, and Bill did give him his last beer. And he went and did the surgery. And then he called and told him it went well. And so they were really excited, but he never came home. So they said, well, maybe it went too well. You know, he's not home. They were really worried. But what he did was he went around and he made amends. And you remember, it's a small town. Everybody lived near everybody. He went around, made amends. He was so afraid that people would know he's an alcoholic. Of course, probably everybody knew, right? Because when they called the nurse, they ask if they had any alcoholics there the next day. She says, well, you're with one. She says, you're with Dr. Bob. So anyway, but the he made amends, and then that's the day we celebrated AA's founding, June 10th, 1935. When you think about it, it's really something. The hand of God. And then they went and met Bill Dodson. I think we'll stop here. Was this helpful? It's good stuff, isn't it? And we'll, so if you can bring your hand out, that would be great. We'll finish up the last few pages, and it goes through, and then we'll finish up with the how to sponsor and how to pass on the gift. So.